It is a great pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in Madison, Wisconsin. Nathaniel Leach serves as Portfolio Manager of LBW Wealth Management. Nathaniel grew up in Western Wisconsin and has been investing in the stock market since high school. In 2003, he attended Kalamazoo College and graduated with a BA in history. His degree encouraged him to conduct diligent research in a disciplined and efficient manner of any concept. In 2008, he enlisted in the U.S. Marine Corps. After completing active duty in 2012 with honorable character, he entered the RIA industry as a securities analyst at a local wealth management firm. He spearheaded multiple initiatives in operations, compliance, and trading as he steadily educated himself further as a value investor. On behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Nathaniel. The floor is yours. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John, for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. So I'm just going to dive right in. There's some disclosures there. Just a little bit about ourselves, co-founder, portfolio manager, fee-based, independent, registered investment advisor. And these are our services that we provide. So today I'm going to be speaking about Formula One Group, which is a Liberty Media Corporation tracker stock. So why did I decide to look at this? It's a play on Formula One. That's right, that's Formula One, those very fast cars that started in Europe. And it is also a play on Live Nation in part, but the overall presentation today will be about Formula One, and I'll get more into that later. This is a classic Liberty story, Liberty, John Malone, Greg Maffei. It's a story of an underinvested, underutilized asset, and management is now taking active measures to reinvest inside of the business. It is what is known as a sum of the parts play. It is also non-indexed because it is a tracker stock. Therefore, one could call it an underfollowed opportunity. The economics of F1 include a predictable revenue stream. As you can see here, cash flows, CapEx light asset. Revenues are fairly diversified. There's newly created segments at play that will hopefully be monetized. There is no reason really in particular why they shouldn't be. Very efficient tax rate due to where they are located in the UK. And they also get most of their revenues and expenses in dollars. So they get that kind of arbitrage, currency arbitrage going on. And the possibility of a new agreement coming online between the teams and Formula One in 2021. Also, throughout the presentation, you'll hear me mentioning F1. That refers specifically to the Formula One entity within the Formula One Group tracker. If you hear me referencing F1 Group or by the ticker symbol F1, then that is me. I am referencing the entire tracker. So let's get back to the history and management of the company. So we know about John Malone, Liberty. He was the CEO of Telecommunications Inc. I realized from my last presentation, I mistakenly misspoke and said that he worked there from 1973 to 1976. That should have been 1996. So that's my bad. Greg Maffei, CFO at Microsoft before he came over to Liberty in 2005. He is infamously, notoriously, or famously known, which have you, for the SiriusXM transaction in early 2009. Liberty Media has taken many forms in the past, and they have originated in one form or another: Liberty Interactive, DirecTV, Starz, which is now part of Lionsgate, and Liberty Broadband. So they brought in Chase Carey, who previously worked at Fox, which is also known as 21st Century Fox today. He had experience there. And prior to joining Fox, he was also the CEO of DirecTV from, I believe, 2003 to 2009. And he has a wealth of experience in the media game. He was actually responsible for revving up Fox's global sports business. So we're going to move on to the transaction here. So this is the transaction in a nutshell. I know it's not ideal to read, but you can easily pick this up as it says in the source note down there, the investor presentation that was released on the announcement date back in September of 2016. So just the real details, $1.1 billion in cash. They were going to issue out 138 million shares in Liberty Media Class C shares. They're also going to issue out, excuse me, 351 million in exchangeable notes. And throughout, as time went on, they managed to do some things, as Liberty is well known to do, to minimize the equity dilution. So, as an example, they had at least three secondary equity offerings of $2 billion in aggregate to facilitate the liquidation of F1's old shareholders, and I'll get more into who those shareholders in a minute, to liquidate their holdings, to facilitate an orderly liquidation of their shares. So what they did was they did these three secondary equity offerings. And what I like to talk about with this particular, one of these particular offerings was the $1.55 billion raise. They utilized the spread between what the Liberty Media Class C shares, LMCK, had risen to, which was $25 a share, versus the reference price, that is the price of the stock when this deal announcement was made, of $21.26. They used that spread, and when you compare that to the amount of shares that they were then selling in that secondary offering, they actually, that is Liberty itself, actually made approximately $230 million in cold cash from the spread between the $25 issue price and the $21.26 reference price, that they were then able to basically increase that original $1.1 billion in cash payment that they were originally using, and then and pay that to the liquidating shareholders as a part of the payment, and to thereby also decrease their equity dilution. So I'm really a big fan of stuff like that, because it saves us, the shareholders, money. This is the new operating structure. Very simple. It's just a matter of moving some pieces across the board. It was done in two different closings. Nothing really more to discuss than that. This is just what the pro forma group capitalization. I'll get more into the details there and how I look at certain things on here. I can come back to that later if you guys wish. So onto, this is what we're going to be discussing, the history. Then we're going to go into the business segment. Then we're going to go into the attributes of F1, the opportunities, also the risks. And then we're going to go into evaluation overview. And then we're going to cap it off with an investment summary. So for the history, F1 in its current form today started in 1950. Bernie Ecclestone is quite infamous because he was really the man behind the throne, so to speak. He was on the throne, I should say, who ran F1 from, he was really a part of it from the, I want to say the 60s or the 70s he started. And it was really in the 80s that he started to consolidate his power. He first started off as a team owner. But then in the 80s, he started to negotiate on behalf, excuse me, the 70s and into the 80s. He started to negotiate on behalf of teams with the broadcasters, the promoters, that is the circuit owners or cities that offered up their cities to for F1 to race in, and between also the advertisers and the sponsors. He started to negotiate with them on behalf of the drivers and the teams. So this in turn led to a series of organizations that we should probably get into a little bit here. So the FIA is the Federation Internationale dell'Automobile. And then the FIA created something called the FISA, which is the Federation Internationale des du Sport Automobile. So that was a subsidiary of FIA. FISA was meant to act as the negotiator, or to act as the negotiator for FIA to the drivers and the teams. So in turn, the drivers and the teams created something called FOCA, which stands for F1 Constructors Association. This was formed in 1974. So they created this entity to negotiate with FISA. So in 1981, these two entities came up with what was called the first Concorde Agreement, because that's where FIA's headquarters is based out of, is Concorde, France. So the FOCA, this agreement here, the Concorde Agreement, guaranteed that all teams would show up for races, which previously they had not, if the races were held in far-flung areas, so it was hard for them to travel to, that it would cost them an arm and a leg to get over there. So by guaranteeing this, this would ensure consistent crowds, which in turn would then be able to act as leverage for broadcasting negotiations, as promotion, promoter negotiations, and sponsorship negotiations. And it also allowed for the teams to pool and share the expenses of transportation to the races, and allowed for them to pool those resources. So then in 1987, an organization called FOPA, F1 Promotions Administrations, was created. And this organization was given the rights of the TV broadcast negotiation and the contracts, receiving the promotion fees on behalf of the teams, and in turn then passed on these revenues to the teams as prize money. This is where Bernie Ecclestone started to take control. He was the organizer of this FOPA organization. He created this to manage all this. So both he and the teams won out, because the teams, all of these, this negotiating power was now centered into this one entity, this FOPA, so that the teams can take their power as a whole instead of separately. Because before it was just every team for themselves. Now it was settled in one organization where approximately 65 to 68% of the pre-team EBITDA was given out to the teams. So in 2000, the FIA sold to FOM, which was basically a successor of FOPA, which, and FOM stands for F1 Management, which was a subsidiary of F1. Gave FIA gave the commercial rights to F1 for 100 years. So this is the infamous 100-year agreement that started in 2011, and it was sold to F1 for the grand price of $360 million upfront. And that was, I mean, it's probably one of the most amazing coups, I think, in sports world, because they essentially sold 100 years of all merchandising, racing, broadcasting, all of their IP for $360 million, for an upfront $360 million cash payment. That's $3.6 million a year that F1 subsequently amortizes on their income statement every year. So now F1 controls all the IP. So we move on to the CVC ownership. So CVC is a private equity firm, and with a number of other private entities, they bought control of F1 through some Bernie had given away control previously because of some divorce proceedings, I guess, and it all kind of went downhill for him, but he did still retain control. So when you pair CVC with Bernie's infamous eccentric management, you get a underinvested, undermonetized asset. You have to consider CVC's incentives in this case, because they're a PE firm. F1 was locked up as an asset, was locked up within a fund. These funds had 10-year with an extension of up to 12 years total terms, where after that time, they have to be liquidated. So this is where Liberty Media came into the picture, and they swooped in and they picked it up for what was probably deemed a reasonable price, but because CVC couldn't hold on to it, it was at CVC's gain that Liberty Media came in. So the Business segments are here. You can read them at your perusal. I get read into this SEC documents, and I found out a number of information about the promotion segment. So these are the core segments: promotions, broadcasting, advertising, sponsorships, and then hospitality. Hospitality principally comprises of the Paddock Club, whereby ticket holders can go and enjoy the races at their leisure throughout the race weekend. So promotions consist of cities or racing circuits that pay F1 to host. They're paid in 5 to 7 years with 5-year extension options, with the F1 is able to exercise. And then these contract details for each segment, they differ, but not materially. So, and then in the new segments category, we have a number of possible new segments, really, that can be categorized underneath some of these other core segments as subsets. Digital merchandising, it's all IP based. None of these had been monetized under Bernie and CVC, and now there's a great opportunity to do so. So here's where we're going to discuss the attributes of the team. So of F1. So the revenue streams, this is a really unique unique opportunity to own an entire sport. I can't think of any other, not only publicly traded, pretty much publicly traded opportunity to own an entire sport. Yes, there's the Liberty Braves. That's just a team within a sport. This is an entire sport that F1 owns. The revenue streams are heavily contracted. So as of September 2016, $9.3 billion in revenues was contracted through 2026. A year passes, August of 17, that number has since shrunk to $7.7 billion through 2026 as well. Something of interest that I like to make note of when it comes to just how good these revenues are, how solid these revenues are, is that F1 has the ability through a debt covenant on their debt to lever up to 8.75 times OIBDA, that is operating income before depreciation and amortization. So they've mentioned that they're only aiming to do 5 to 6 times. They're actually paring back the debt right now because it was so high. But when you compare that 5 to 6 times versus the other Liberty companies that they have control over. So for example, Qurate has a 2.5 times goal when it comes to their debt over OIBDA. Discovery has a range of 3 to 3.5 times. Charter has a range of 4 to 4.5 times. The highest that I've seen is in Liberty Global and Liberty Latin America have a range of 4 to 5 times. So when I see that they have 5 to 6 times, then that's something that I get excited about with regards to how strong this business is. The cost structure, also a typical Liberty, it's a classic tenet of a Liberty investment, similar as one could say Sirius XM, that is that it is a low fixed cost and high variable. So the low fix is the administration of the business, which is very low, and then high variable, which is the team payout. The team's payout, that is the high variable cost. And that's all based upon the revenue is taken in. So it's very advantageous to Liberty, to F1. So I wanted to go a little bit into the team payout, that is the pre-team EBITDA, which is 76-77% of revenues. So I did some research. In 2013, ESPN released a report, and in it, it did detail how the team's payout is sliced and diced. I'm not 100% sure on some of the numbers, but it's supposedly 62.5%. I've also seen 60% of the pre-team EBITDA is what the team gets a share of. That is, but in recent years, they've reached as high as 67-68% due to one-time costs of approximately 5%. So that's going to come back into play later on. Attendance and viewership, this I found to be quite fascinating. So they've actually, in 2016, they claimed 390 million unique viewers. In 2017, that changed to 352 million. So it looks like they lost a good portion of their fan viewership, but in reality, what happened was that it appears that it was measured differently. Anyways, the 352 million is a far more accurate number. Now, when you compare that to the attendance at the F1 Grand Prix in Britain, and then compare that to the NFL Super Bowl, it's nearly double. F1 has nearly doubled the attendance. Then when you look at the unique viewers and you compare that to the Super Bowl's numbers, it's over triple. And that's something that's quite fascinating to me because the NFL in 2017 earned $1.32 billion in advertising. Now, when you compare that to F1, it's a huge divide. F1 earned $273 million. That's ridiculous. That's more than five times, if not almost six times difference. So that is an example of that under monetization that I am looking into here. With regards to these core segments and teams, I just wanted to point out how the segments all work together. So the sponsors pay teams based on the viewership, that the viewership is encapsulating of broadcasting. The location and the number of events and broadcasting increases the broadcasting, the negotiation leverage that F1 has with their broadcasting contracts. And hospitality segment is really an on-site value add to the fans. A number of those segments that I mentioned earlier that are underutilized under investment, again, are digital slash OTT, that's over the top, merchandising, licensing, gaming, social media, and new markets. So the opportunities that we have here are quite numerous. So if you take a look at this, it's quite fascinating how this is all sprung up. So you have there's a great opportunity to do promotion and marketing of the brand. In the promotion section, you have the opportunity to add, they have the opportunity to add new races within the ads and sponsors category. I'm not quite sure of the number of sponsors there are today. I've seen both seven and I've heard 17. Seven refers specifically to the engine manufacturers and parts suppliers. There's a number of holes that there are luxury providers. There are a number of holes in the advertising categories, of which there are luxury providers in certain sectors, such as telecom, financial, fuel, soft drink, hard spirits, apparel, hospitality, tech. These are all mentioned in Liberty Media presentations on this subject that have not yet been filled with advertisers. So there's a huge opportunity for F1 here. When you compare that, let's say that there's 17 total advertisers and sponsors for F1. You compare that to the Major League Baseball in the US, they have 75. That's incredible. That's almost five times the difference there. In broadcasting, it was mentioned that there's more broad the more broadcasters that there are, that increases F1's leverage and negotiating power to negotiate better contracts for themselves. It's definitely under monetized relative to other sports in that regard. The Paddock Club for hospitality, it's kind of reminds me of what happened with the Braves. So the Atlanta Braves opened up a new stadium last year, and what they were trying to do was they shrunk the amount of people that could fit inside of the stadium. But what they were trying to do was they were trying to curate higher end clientele, and this worked very much because they were able to drastically increase their revenues, but by also shrinking the audience. They also were able to create kind of an atmosphere around the stadium. So I think that this very much resonates with me in that they might be able to replicate this kind of a similar experience with the Paddock Club. Within the new segments, there is a great chance to increase content distribution. Previously, there was 0% interest by Bernie and management to monetize IP beyond their core segments, that is social media, other digital forms, merchandising, et cetera. They simply, according to what I've heard, they just took what came their way. There was really no negotiating. And they probably didn't take, for example, with the broadcasting negotiation, they probably didn't really take advantage What typically happens in this kind of business, a re-rating multiple, that is 1.5 times the original contract base amount, is typical when these contracts are renegotiated. And there is a possibility that they did not take advantage of that. If they did, they probably didn't take advantage of it at very high amounts, very high multiples. So I'd like to then get into the risks. Now, there are definitely a lot of risks, but whether they are that material is a question for the listener. So when it comes to the Concord agreements, this is through 2020. So the risks with regards to the Concord agreement is, for example, the terms may lead to deterioration in the sports quality, that is lower investment in the engine technology due to a proposed spending cap. There may be no agreement formed, and perhaps a competing league might be formed as a competitor to F1, although I should note that this happened in the past in the 80s and did not succeed, because they would have to basically build new tracks, find new cities that would be willing to host these tracks, find cities that would be willing to basically construct the tracks if they were not already constructed. They would have to find broadcasters who would want to create contracts with them to view their product, which is very hard to do if they don't even have a product to begin with. And they would also have to find advertisers and sponsors. And that's all very hard to do to get off the ground. There could be negative terms for F1. It could be either a similar or higher percentage team payout. Currently, as I said, it roughly approximates 68% with these one-time costs added in. When you strip the one-time cost, it should be 62.5% to 63%. There were rumors for the current, there's current proposal floating around. There were rumors saying that that F1 wanted to include the engine manufacturers within the revenue share, within the team payout. And those engine manufacturers currently include, I believe, Mercedes, Ferrari, Renault, and Honda. Now, one thing I'd like to make note is that Ferrari is a team, and that's going to come to play here, because the current Concord terms state that Ferrari gets a 5% payout just for being the longest running team in the F1 racing. So they get this 5% special payment. However, if the engine manufacturers are paid a share of the team payouts, then perhaps that might encourage Ferrari to sign on the dotted line with this new Concord agreement, because they'll still be getting a higher payment than most, but instead of it being based on, based upon their previous track record decades ago, it's now going to be based off of what they do with their engines, which I think will go over very well with the teams and could perhaps play into a lower payout overall that the F1 has to pay the teams, and could then therefore work to F1's benefit. Another risk within the Concord agreement is that there might be too many races, which could lead to potentially driver burnout. This is a very small risk. More year-round racing versus the current nine-month time frame, and this isn't accounting for it could be like for one-time events, and it isn't inclusive of what is currently a 25 race limitation that is stated within the Concord agreement. There's also the chance of a risk of dilution, that is commoditization of F1's brand due to sponsors being onboarded that for, I would describe as low to mid-end brands, but there's definitely room for other luxury to mid-end brands within that category, as I mentioned on the opportunity slide. Monetization. So the broadcasting contract, they may fail to re-rate at a decent multiple from their prior contract. There could be OTT product difficulties and or little penetration with that OTT product. That OTT product actually did launch this year. There were some difficulties with it. It was geared towards that hardcore fan, and I do have that built into my scenarios. But it might have some issues, but it's growing. It's going through growing pains, so it should have some benefit into the future. New markets, that is, into the US and China principally, they may not be able to successfully market themselves and or grow into those new markets. Might be able to not be able to find those viewers and fan followings that they're craving. Hence, that could then trickle down into other core segments and the new segments as well. And then there's the debt. Liberty is well known for leveraging up. So in the time frame of 2023 to 2024, there is a $4.5 billion amount due. So if it could be a combination of if interest rates rise, of both a variable and fixed rate issues, then Liberty may be unable to, F1 may be unable to roll over their debt and refinance, and that could materially affect the company. So with regards to the valuation overview, what's the best way to value F1? When I say F1 again, it's with regards specifically to F1, the operating company within F1 Group. So there are some factors to consider. So what I've listed here are a number of different methods that I, in the pursuit of valuation, I was trying to figure out, okay, what is the best way to look at the valuation of F1? Because some of these methods that I've listed here are not wrong. It's just a matter of how do you look at it. So I mentioned previously that I was going to touch briefly on Live Nation. So Live Nation is the ticker symbol LYV there. So one could look at just F1 only within the operating group. So by subtracting just the market caps of Live Nation and then subtracting the other public equities and private assets and cash on F1 Group's asset on the balance sheet, and then divide that by F1's free cash flow, and you do get a very low appetizing 11 times multiple. However, that isn't fair to look at it that way because you're not including the debt that is on F1 Group's balance sheet. Now, I'm not referencing F1's operating group debt that approximately, I want to say, $3.2 billion today. I'm not referencing that. I'm actually referencing the approximate, I think it's $2.3 billion today, that is actually assigned to Formula One Group's corporate balance sheet. I would argue that you need to take the final entry there, the MCF1 only minus the net asset value divided by the F1 FCF, that last entry for 19.6 multiple. I would argue that you need to use that multiple because what I did there was I took all of the F1 Group's core assets, which included Live Nation, their Time Warner, and their Liberty Braves intergroup interests, other public holdings, private assets, and then also the corporate cash load. And when you take all that and you subtract out and you subtract that, subtract the debt load of approximately $2.3 billion, then you're left with approximately $2 billion in net assets. So if you take today's market cap, subtract from that the net asset amount of approximately $2 billion, you're left with about $5.4 to $5.5 billion in market cap that is applicable to F1. And that's how I get that multiple of 19.6. So if we move on to the next slide, this is a snapshot of a spreadsheet that I came up with. There's a lot more where this came from. Be happy to share this with everybody if you'd like to see it. So there's a number of different scenarios here that I'd like to discuss. So differentiation between these growth rates for the race promotion fees, broadcasting, advertising and sponsorships, hospitality, other services, those growth rates that you see there, the 3%, 1%, and then 5% in scenarios 5 and 6, those are basically either, you could look at those as either inflation or growth, scenario dependent. So I figure that if these contracts for the promoters, broadcasting and the sponsorships were to increase simply by inflation, then the upside increases drastically. Broadcasting re-rate multiple, that's the fourth line there, the third line, 1.5 times, and then it increases to 1.8 times. So the typical re-rating multiple can vary depending upon the sport. So just to give you some frame of reference here, historically the NFL has re-rated at 1.6. And then at the higher end of the scale, you have the NBA, which re-rated at 2.8. So I didn't go too high up in that regard. I just wanted to keep it as conservative as possible, which is why I stuck mainly to the 1.5 times throughout, which I think is a very good odds, especially with what Liberty is doing to reinvest in the F1 business. And then I go only as high as 1.8 times. Digital slash OTT penetration, that references what I estimate that it can increase. So let's say it's 0% in 2018. And then I have it growing by 0.5% increments from 2019 to 2022 in some of these scenarios. So with a unique viewers of 352 million, let's just assume that 2% is just 7 million fans. 7 million worldwide would have to buy this product. And I have conservatively said that it would cost $8 a month worldwide. So there's a lot of upside with regards to that for sure. So the team allocation last year was approximately 68%. That it was actually more like 67.2 in 2017. If we assume that it's 68% going forward, with the exception of decreasing to 65% and 63% in 2021 as a result of the negotiation terms, then I think we have it's just one more factor that could lead to almost a hockey stick in earnings at the very extreme of cases. And again, please remember that there were one-off charges of 5% of pre-team EBITDA that was paid in the past couple of years. Those may flow off, but even conservatively, assuming they go 68% until 2021, as I think is a very safe assumption. The next line down is debt payment. As a side note, I have assumed that the interest rates, the average interest rate paid on the debt increases by 0.5% increments through 2019 and 2022. The biggest debt amount is based on a variable rate on LIBOR, so that is a risk. But throughout all of these, with the exception of scenario one, I do have assumed that there is debt repayment going forward. So remember that 5 to 6 times leverage multiple, that does come into play. I've also assumed that share repurchases, with the exception of scenario one, occur. So when I've assumed that the levered free cash flow amount, subtract from that debt payments, 200 million, everything left over would be used to repurchase shares. And I assume that they would be repurchased at today's Formula One Class C prices. And after 2023, so from 2024 on, I assume that the absolute free cash flow dollar amount does not increase. So future growth from 2024 on would be from share repurchases alone, again, at today's Formula One Class C prices. So I'd like to go through these scenarios a little bit here in a little bit more detail, what I was thinking. So scenario one was the worst case scenario, 0%. And just a 1.5 times re-rating multiple, zero debt repayment. A 10-year multiple would be 11.1. So that would be what I would call the worst case. The more conservative case would be for 3% growth and then 1% in the hospitality growth, 68% team allocation, but they would also start repaying debt in 2018 or 2019, it'd be 2019. And That would be a conservative 15.3 10-year multiple. And what I think is what would probably be the base case scenario is scenario three. So this would require digital OTT penetration to occur. This would also require the team allocation to go to 65% in 2021. Now, remember, there may be a lot of one-time cost at play. The base payout is at least 62.5% right now. So just assuming 65% starting in 2021 to either allow for no more one-time costs or to allow for a lower team payout percentage will drastically increase the multiple to 28.2. Then you can go to the more extreme scenarios of like scenario five or scenario six. This is where everything would be firing on all cylinders, high percentage increases per year for the promoters, broadcasting and sponsorship contracts. Hospitality just stays at 1% throughout. Same penetration up to 2% by 2022. Now this would be the big one part right here. The team allocation drops to 63% in scenario five and 60% in 2021. I'm not going to bet on that happening. I think, especially the 60% scenario, I think that's extremely optimistic. I think that the optimistic scenario of scenario five is more worth it, more likely. So I think that would be a better possibility to occur. And I think that those increases of 5% for race promotion and broadcasting is very realistic in the long term with what Liberty has been doing to reinvest into the business. So what I think the most likely is something that happens probably in between scenario two and three. I think it's more likely to be like 3% growth, race promotion, broadcasting, and advertising, and 1% hospitality. And then that the percentage of team allocation drops down to 65% starting in 2021. Share repurchase and debt repayment occur, including continues to go. And the multiple becomes 18 times. And when I say most likely to occur, I mean it's more likely to occur in that base case that it's not. If it does happen, it's a very small downside from today's prices. If you look back at the multiple here of 19.6 I'm referencing, that's what, a less than 10% drop from an 18 times. So it's definitely very appetizing from those levels. So if you compare scenario five versus the worst case of scenario one, you get a 3-to-1 return, and then a scenario five versus scenario two, you get a 6-to-1 return. So when I was thinking about whether I would recommend this for buying today, I told John earlier that I wasn't quite sure. I hadn't finished the work yet to determine if it was a valuation. So I've been going back and forth on this because at today's prices, I estimate that you are starting to purchase it at a minimum of a 30% margin of safety. When you consider those other scenarios at play, if you go to the more optimistic ones, you're then delving into the margin of safety territory of anywhere between 50 to almost 70% margin of safety, which is an extremely high buy-in price. However, because of our business model, I would probably warrant that our business model here, that is a wealth management. We're investing with individually managed accounts. So I would warrant that I would start buying it today. I'm starting to nibble on it for our clients' accounts, but I'm not doing so in a whole hog position. So yes, I would recommend that if you're looking for ideas to put in your portfolios, I think that this is a good one, but I don't think it's a good one to do all out quite yet. If I was in a partnership business model where I can really wait, where I have the clients that are looking 10, 20, 30 years out, and it's with money that they can actually afford to lose, it's a very different mindset. And most good partnerships out there have those kind of clients that would warrant that mode of thinking, and where those investment managers can wait for that fat pitch. So you could wait for lower prices. When this deal was announced, it was at 21, 22 bucks a share, and it just quickly skyrocketed from there. So perhaps there are lower prices ahead due to maybe the Concord agreements don't go the way that F1 would like. Some teams threaten to break away, execution risks. There are a number of risks out there that would warrant maybe an investment manager to wait. But in my shoes, I would start to buy in small positions today. Not a full position, but perhaps a quarter or half position, which is, we all know, can differ from manager to manager. So to sum up, this is an opportunity to own an entire sport. The cost structure leads to a very high, very well contracted revenue based, high free cash flow amount. There are multiple opportunities to grow revenues through either ramping up the core segments or investing in the new segments, specifically really just the distribution of their IP, which was not well done with prior management. And then management, the current management, they have shown throughout their track record that they're excellent capital allocators when it comes with regards to Dr. Malone and Greg Maffei, and heavily experienced when speaking about Chase Carey, as well as Dr. Malone and Maffei. They have shown that they're always looking for the best place to reinvest their capital. And I do have very high confidence in their management style. And that's it.
Nathaniel, thank you so much for articulating your thesis so clearly on what does look like a compelling wide moat business. For those who are interested in doing more work and tracking this idea over time, what might be some data points to keep track of to either validate or challenge your thesis?
That's an excellent question. So there are a couple of key points that one can follow. So one can look at the fee. So for going down the core segment line, you got the race promotion segment. What you can look at is you can count the number of races, and then you can divide that by the race promotion fee amount, which is segmented out in the revenue in the income statement. You can calculate the fee per race. You can calculate the growth of that number as time goes on. With broadcasting, you can also calculate the growth in broadcasting revenue. It's not going to be even every single year. For example, from 2015 to 14, it only grew 0.6%. But from 15 to 16, it grew by 7.1%. It's going to be lumpy. That's one way to track that segment. With regards to advertising and sponsors, this is where you have to find out how many sponsors are currently with F1, but which can be kind of hard to find. But once you do that, you then divide that by the advertising and sponsorship revenue. And that's where you can start to find the revenue per sponsor, and you can start to track the growth for that. Hospitality, that's really just assume that just either stays even or grows by maybe 1 or 2%. Digital, and then for all the new areas, it's hard to know because they're all new revenue segments. So that'll be hard to come by. And then the biggest, probably the two biggest factors is the team percentage of team allocation. Watching what happens with the contract negotiations of that, keeping your ear to the ground, seeing what's happening with that, because the engine manufacturers might start to get a piece of that. So either it will increase to compensate them, or perhaps they'll be able to negotiate a lower payout amount to the teams and the car engine manufacturers, because they're trying to encourage them to think long term and be willing to accept a lower portion of the pie. But the pie will expand, or hopefully expand over time. So they're trying to encourage the teams to think long term in that regard. And then the second biggest is the debt load. So when you look at the, it's going to be critical for them, for Liberty to pay down the debt load. And they're on their, well on their way to doing that. They restructured a lot of the debt throughout the last year from now till 2017, beginning of 17, when the second part of the deal closed. They managed to lower their interest rate payout, and they saved, estimates go from anywhere from 90 to 115 million in interest rate expense. Now, what they failed to tell you though is that that was just for F1 operating group, that actual entity within F1 group, because Liberty Media Tracker Formula One Group, the corporate side of the balance sheet, compensated for that debt load by basically taking up more debt onto their balance sheet by essentially monetizing their Time Warner's stock. They created an exchangeable for that. So that was one factor with regards to that. And those are probably the biggest things to look for.
Terrific. Well, Nathaniel, I'll leave it there, and I would just encourage listeners to feel free to follow up with you directly with their own thoughts or questions. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us once again and share your insights.
Well, thank you once again, John. I appreciate it.
Goodbye for now.